The Guardian.
Hello all, James Richardson here, and before we get started with today's edition of Football Weekly, I'm going to point you in the direction of our sponsor Squarespace. For more about building beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. And now, on with the show. Day 8 of Euro 2016 Football Daily. Dateline Saint-Étienne, as Croatian team light up clash with Czechs, and then so do their supporters. Use of Skoda, meanwhile, on field and a checkpoint halts Croatian progress. Next up is off to the Riviera for the Nice guys, where Spain have turned up. Yes, that's Spain, with a big win over Turkey. While in the other match, Italy leave biscuit game veteran Sweden with a bitter taste in their mouth. What's up on Saturday? Well, there's Belgium Ireland in Bordeaux, Portugal against Austria, and Iceland are back playing Hungary in Marseille. We'll be hearing all about that and more in this Euro 2016 Football Daily. Paolo Bandini, you've got some moves. Over here, Alan. Alan Smith, do join us.
Hello.
That'll help. Hey, well, turn that down. Thank you. Alan Smith.
Hello.
No, not that Alan Smith.
Nor that one.
Nor the other one. It's great to see you. It's been too long.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm fine. And ask Paolo Bandini how he is.
Paolo, how are you?
I'm great. I'm super.
Paolo, you've been full of beans today, and I can only imagine it's connected to Italy's winning start in this Euro 2016 European Championship tournament.
It's definitely not unconnected to that.
All right.
Although it's going to diminish if you keep my beer over on that side of the table.
Oh, yeah. Go easy on that. It's the only one we can afford. We'll be talking about that Italy game very shortly, but, you know, news... And that we should go straight away to Nick Ames, who was only at that game at the Geoffrey Guichard in Saint-Étienne, where Croatia somehow bungled away a 2-goal lead against the Czech Republic, and their fans got proper naughty. Nick, once again trouble with the fans. Once again, you're there. What's going on?
I'll leave it up to you to decide whether there's a common denominator there, but... I'm on the way back to Lyon now from Saint-Étienne, where the game was. It was a bizarre evening, wasn't it? For 85 minutes, it was the most regulation 2-0 win you can imagine. From 2-1 win from a very impressive Croatia team, it has to be said, who were really gripping things and looking like contenders for the competition, I think it's fair to say. And then everything changed in the blink of an eye with about 4 minutes to go.
It was amazing. I mean, two stories here. One is the football match, which we'll come back to in a second perhaps, but also that 5-minute interlude where Croatian fans interrupted a game that they were winning quite handily with flares. Just give us a quick summary, if you could, of the reasons that they'd be doing this.
Well, the reasons are probably far too complex to pack even into an entire podcast, to be honest. But broadly, it was a deliberate act of self-sabotage, which sounds incredible just to say, by a section of their supporters. And it kind of crystallises something that's been going on for some time. A big section of the fans is furious at the way football in the country is being run by the Federation. There's been a bit of an open war, I'd say, for several years between various groups of supporters and Slavko Mamić, the head of the FA, who is a controversial figure who people might be aware of. He's on trial soon for tax evasion. He's been in prison, stuff like that. And the fans have had manifestations in stadiums before. In November 2014, they did something very similar to this, as you may remember, in Italy. At the Euro 2016 qualifier, they threw flares on the pitch and the game was stopped. A few months after that, there was a rematch that, as a consequence, was played behind closed doors in Split, but it didn't stop somebody getting in there and sticking an image of a swastika on the pitch. There have also been instances of... racist chanting at other games, and they're in fact playing their first two home World Cup qualifiers behind closed doors. so that's a bit of context. It's all, I think, designed to bring attention to how they perceive the FA and Mamich are behaving,
right,
and to ultimately bring them down.
And this is because Mamich is essentially, they feel, a corrupt figure?
Yeah, they feel he's completely corrupt and is not serving the country at all, or the country's football, in the way that he ought to be.
Right.
And it's all designed against him. And it was interesting because the Croatian media this morning had a guy from their official supporters club saying that he'd heard something might happen and that they would fight against it if so. And that's where the little scuffles that happened in the crowd as well came from. It was very much pro-action versus against taking action.
Right.
Almost setting against each other in the crowd. It was really quite troubling to see.
Well, you mentioned the fact that they've already got a stadium ban for their World Cup qualifiers, and there's suggestions even that this being their third strike, as it were, they could even be thrown out of World Cup qualifying. They're still very much, despite this point in this Euro 2016 competition. The game, though, as you say, for 85 minutes, it looked like they were absolutely cruising it, 2-0 up for a large part of it, so cruising that they could just take Modric off. Is there some suggestion that Luka Modric actually is going to be out of the picture for the Spain game?
Yeah, that's the word I was hearing afterwards, that he does have a bit of a knock and maybe doubtful for that game, which obviously would not have mattered a jot if they'd have held on to that lead. Now it could be fairly important in terms of where they finish, at least in the group. As you say, for so much of that game they were cruising. Modric and Rakitic had the run of that midfield from sort of 10 minutes onwards, just absolutely strolling, cutting them apart time and again. And they regretted in the end a few missed chances. There was a sitter for Mandzukic, really, which he took from about 10 yards out a couple of minutes after the second goal. The goal from the Czech Republic didn't seem to have that much consequence when it went in. And then there's a very strong feeling in the Croatian camp, and I think to anyone watching it probably almost goes without saying, that the rush of blood by Vida at the end to concede the penalty and the build-up of Czech pressure before it was a consequence of them losing their energy in calming their supporters down,
right,
and being a bit flustered by what happened. And their manager, Ante Čačić, who was furious afterwards and really no holds barred in his press conference, in his criticism, said that delay, which was about 5 minutes, definitely put his squad off. Rakitic came in later and spoke to us as well, and he said something very similar. And there was an air of absolute disgust, I would say, around the people from the Croatian camp who I heard from and spoke to.
Right. Okay. And any suggestion that the fans might do something when they do play Spain in a couple of days' time?
I have not heard any fresh suggestion of that, but nothing at the moment would surprise me whatsoever, because I think it's fair to say that action was planned at fairly long range for this tournament, whether it was to take place in the match against Turkey in Paris a few days ago or this. I think there was no doubt something was planned. We'll wait and see what happens and if any sanctions are slapped down immediately, but certainly the ease with which flares, for example, are being brought into quite a lot of these stadia at the moment would suggest that it wouldn't be impossible to do something else.
Putting the ooh-la-la into football, this is, how you say, Euro 2016 Football Daily from Le Guardian.
Nick Ames, that's got to be one of the most unexpected turnarounds I've seen in ages.
Yeah, and, you know, The incident with the fireworks is clearly a big talking point, and perhaps the turning point that's obviously been alluded to by Nick there. I thought it was interesting as well. He already mentioned some of the comments made afterwards, but even Perisic came out afterwards and said maybe it's best that we just don't play at all if these things are going to keep happening,
really?
Which is a pretty strong thing to say for a player in a tournament where Croatia had, up until the last 20 minutes of that game, been playing very well.
Up until Modric went off.
Well, that was what I was going to say. You know, I think we can possibly bring back the change in that game to before the incident with the fireworks, and maybe they would have held it together anyway. But the Skoda goal, the first goal that Czech Republic scored, was before the fireworks came on the pitch, and it was after Modric went off, and definitely there was a very clear decline in their performance from that moment. And it's not surprising, because when you looked at Modric, and they had, you know, they just pulled together a bunch of his highlights on, I think it was on BBC at halftime as well. You just see every single pass he's playing, every little touch is just phenomenal. There was one in the middle of the first half that was, I think, fundamentally inconsequential, but it was outside of the right boot to a player who was about 20 yards away and behind him. And he just barely even glances up and just flicks off this off his instep and sends it over there. And it's just... It's stunning. It's absolutely stunning football.
And it's a bit gutting if, as Nick suggests, he's not going to be in the game against Spain, because that would have been potentially one of the all-time great midfield kind of, well, another word beginning with M, but, you know, just general pleasures.
Yeah,
you know?
I think I was looking at this the other day. Between all 24 teams, there seems to be three teams with really strong midfields. France, Spain, well, not quite. France, Spain, yeah, and Croatia. Mm. But Croatia without Modric, it's not the same team.
All right. Well, really, two of those three teams, France and Spain, are already qualified for the knockout stages. Another one is also through, despite not having what you rate as good midfield, and that's Italy. Should we talk about them?
Yeah, well, it's actually sort of ties together with this group, because actually a thing that has been talked about in the Italian press even before today's game against Sweden was, actually, do we want to win this group? Because if we finish top of the group, then we're going to play either Spain or Croatia. And the way that those two teams had both been playing up to this point, neither of those was at all an attractive prospect. So perhaps the possibility now that Croatia could even potentially slip to third in that group if they lose to Spain and Czech win their final game would actually be seen as a positive for Italy.
Right, well, Italy certainly didn't seem to be busting a gut to win their early game on Friday against Sweden. You made an interesting point, actually, during this game, Paolo. You were saying that people have talked about the fact that they've got Thiago Motta as number 10. There's a total lack of creativity in the middle of the field. So it's all about the wide men, and Sweden effectively dealt with them.
Yeah, but Motta hasn't been involved yet, and that's sort of a thing that is going to sort of become more of a question as the tournament goes on, is whether or not he is a better option in that role than De Rossi is, because De Rossi is many things, but he is not Andrea Pirlo's substitute, which is what he's being asked to do at the moment. And frankly, it was interesting in this game, you could see that constantly the centre backs for Italy, when it wasn't Bonucci trying to play that same ball he played to Jaccarino down the middle of the pitch, what he was trying to do 90% of the time, and his team was trying to do 90% of the time, was work the ball out to Candreva and Florenzi on the flanks. Now, that makes a lot of sense. They're both very good players. They're both very capable of carrying the ball forward. But I do think that there was something in, you know, the way these teams were set up, Italy should have been wanting to go through the middle of the pitch, because Sweden play a flat 4-4-2. They've actually got Italy outmanned on the flanks. They've got the fullbacks and the wingers coming forward. They've got the numerical advantage in the middle of the field, and they seem to have no interest in using it, which is, to me, a bit of an indictment of the players they have there.
Right. The likes of Parola and that, who had a, to be fair, desperately disappointed game, as did Eder, until the moment when bizarrely, in the 88th minute, he suddenly turned into Lord knows what and slalomed past a couple of players and then stuck it in the net.
Yeah, I mean, there was absolutely nothing in Italy's performance at all to suggest that they were going to win the game. There was absolutely nothing in Eder's performance to suggest that he was going to have a critical impact on the game. But, you know, this is something that has already been talked about on the podcast, that he'd only scored once in 15 games for Inter. But actually, before he joined Inter, these are exactly the sorts of goals he scored for Sampdoria. He's a player who played on the flank before this season. He's come a bit more inside at the start of the season and was playing in a two-man attack. But he is very good at cutting in off the flank. He has got great acceleration. And when his confidence is up, those are the goals he scores. He beats men. He has absolute confidence in himself to put it in the bottom corner. So who knows that maybe this could be a moment of some sort of turning point. But it was certainly a surprise in the context of that game, which looked very much speed dribbling towards a 0-0. Oh, sorry, I just want to say one thing before, because it's a pedantry point that I'm going to get pulled up on.
Okay.
I said that Motta hasn't been involved. I meant to say involved from the start.
He came on in the first game.
Yeah.
Sweden haven't had a single shot, as you probably know by now, listener, in either of their two games. Their last game, of course, will be coming up. It's against, thinks hard, is it?
Belgium.
Of course, Belgium. This result could have big impact on Ireland, of course.
Yeah, very much so. Slightly biased, I admitted I cheered when Italy scored earlier on. The key, I think, from an Irish point of view anyway, is that Conte may now rest five players who are on yellow cards for the Ireland game. And as Paolo alluded to about not necessarily maybe wanting to finish top of the group, it sort of points for a classic chucking on the kit man and the physio playing a centre half, I think.
Well, right. Conte did say afterwards that he will use some of the players who have featured less to this point. So he's basically already said he is going to rotate the side.
But that, you know, to be fair, there's a lot of Italian fans. We're delighted to hear that. Maybe we'll get to see Insigne. Yeah. Maybe we'll get to see Bernardeschi, players who have got some real flair to them. Which I know the first game was terrific, but that performance today was soporific.
Well, I'm sorry, we probably don't want to keep banging on about Italy. I was just going to say, the thing which was interesting today compared to Belgium is that actually the approach was exactly the same and it didn't work. And I think that Conte got a lot of praise for getting his tactics exactly right in that first game. The worry is he just going to do the same thing every game? And that won't always work.
It certainly won't. Belgium playing Ireland on Saturday. We'll be previewing that game very shortly, Alan, don't worry. But not before we've doffed our cap and clacked our castanets at the Spanish, who are back, Alan. They're back.
Yeah, I don't think you can overplay how bad Turkey were evening.
But this was like watching that Spain-Ireland game from the last Euros.
Maybe that actually possibly is a disservice to Turkey. But I think Spain were... could have scored 5 or 6 goals, but once the third went in, just seemed to sit back, job is done. It became, the last 40 minutes or so, just became like a training match.
Right. Spain emerging without conceding yet again. Do you know, they've in their last 10 competitive matches, how many goals have they conceded? Anybody? None, Paolo, none goals. Right. Although that third goal, it was offside, wasn't it? Mm.
Just about, but I think it is also worth noting that the only outfield player that didn't touch the ball was Gerard Pique, and there were 21 passes in the bottom of the goal.
So in those cases, do you feel creative license? You allow the half offside?
I had a bit of a laugh when I heard Tony Pulis on ITV's commentary during the replay saying, it looks to be offside, but that doesn't really matter.
Right.
Who then, I should add, brilliantly when the game sort of descended into nothingness, spent a little bit more than a minute discussing zonal marking versus man-to-man from wide set pieces.
Right. Which one? Did he have a winner or not?
He said that most clubs go for zonal when the free kick is wide, but if it's a narrow free kick, they tend to go man-to-man.
Okay. How about Morata then? A player who had a lot of things said on his account, but he certainly... He certainly looked decisive in this match.
Yeah, the first goal, the header was wonderfully taken, I thought. And he, you know, the third goal as well, he took it very well. He's a very good player. I'm a huge Alvaro Morata fan. I think he's very young for how old he is. I mean, he's 24 now, and I think he's a very young 24. We talked about earlier this season in Turin, he broke up with his girlfriend, and that seemed to really sort of knock him off for a little while. And actually, last year in Turin, I remember early in the season, they were talking about calling him up to the Spain senior team for the first time, and he was saying, I still don't know if I've achieved everything I want to achieve with the under-21s, where he won most things there were to win. And I think he's been a slow one to take on this mantle of being a star. But I think he is a star. I think he's going to be really, really brilliant in the next few years.
Mm. Not in Turin, though, by the sound of it.
Still not ruled out yet. Not ruled out.
All right, excellent. Anyway, so that was Spain putting 3 whole goals past an opponent and looking scary good once again. Have a bit of this, and then we'll talk about Saturday.
Coming to you live from the Sporter Cabin.
Sorry, not live, pre-recorded. But we are in a sporter cabin, a psychological sporter cabin.
Andy Zaltzman, Summer of Sport.
Brought to you in glorious sportoscope.
Available now on iTunes and theguardian.com.
Hey, Alan, you're up on rules. I only ask because La Flama Blanca points out that in England's group, all 4 teams could still finish with 4 points and identical records. And then what happens? La Flama Blanca wants to know.
It goes down to, it goes goal difference, then goals scored.
Right.
It then goes there. It goes into fair play.
Mm-hmm. Oh, does it go to fair play?
And after that, if it's still level, coefficient. Which will be very, very exciting.
Who's got the better coefficient in that group would be England.
England.
Right? England.
This is actually a very sad situation that we've missed out on now, which is that there is a middle step in there, which only, not for that group, but for a group where you have two teams finish identical points, identical goal difference, and can't be separated on their head-to-head,
yes.
which could have happened with Spain and Croatia if they'd both won today, if Croatia hadn't sort of fallen apart.
Mm-hmm.
Then if they are playing each other in the final game, and only if they are playing each other in the final game, they have a penalty shootout.
Really?
Yeah.
In the group stages?
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Hey, since we're here, Budinho asks thoughts on Rudy Garcia. Rudy Garcia, as you probably know, has taken over from Ronald Koeman. Probably not official yet, but he looks in line to take over. Is that right?
Sounds like it, yeah.
Yeah. Andy Tolovi, Rudy Garcia to Saints. Any thoughts? Good fit. Paolo?
He did a great job for about a year at Roma. I thought when he first came in, he was someone... it was really interesting. I actually got to... I think I got the first official interview with him when he joined Roma.
Did he play the guitar at you?
No, although I tried to talk to him about that and he wasn't interested in talking about that because he was very serious. He was very serious in our conversation. But he I think he is one of those people who knows how to create an inner circle of players that he has a very good rapport with. And I think that was something when he first went there, everyone for a long time, and indeed it reared its head again for Spalletti afterwards, had been having a hard time with Totti. And actually when he first got there, he managed to integrate that changing room at Roma in a way that it hadn't been for a few years. And he really got the best out of them for about a year. I think, unfortunately, when he got into his second season, and there's some talk of this being something that was a repeating pattern from his time in Liga, he didn't seem to know how to kick on. He didn't know how to add some nuance and change things up. It seemed like once plan A wasn't working, it sort of became this just repetitive draws, basically, is what happened to Roma. But I think he can certainly galvanise an environment for a short time, certainly.
Right. Okay, there you go. I agree. Now, Saturday, Belgium taking on Ireland in Bordeaux. Should we talk about that first of all? Alan, you ready for that? Should we have a bit of you on Ireland?
Yeah. I think the loss of Jonathan Walters is going to have quite a big impact on Ireland. The team that started on Sweden is by far, against Sweden, is by far Ireland's best team. But you could even see from three substitutes that came on that there isn't that depth there. I'm trying to second guess Martin O'Neill, which is never easy. Even the players are still second guessing him right now, I suspect. Robbie Brady could push forward from left back into a more midfield position, which would mean Stephen Ward coming in for Walters, and then there would be a bigger midfield shuffle. But Walters, even though he wasn't fit against Sweden and said within a minute that he felt his Achilles was quite painful but was willing to continue, even at 60 or 70% fit, John Walters is still, I think, an improvement on the rest of the attacking players that Ireland can bring in from the bench.
Mm. And defensively, the big question. I mean, Belgium kind of went from being one of the tournament favourites to... can they beat Ireland, which is a mighty fall. But they actually did create a fair few chances in that opening game with Italy. And there was some extraordinary or classic Italian defending going on there. How well can O'Shea and Kieran Clark affect the same kind of defensive resolve?
Before watching Ibrahimovic against Italy today, I would have said that they did a really good job in handling him. But again, Ibrahimovic was pretty much anonymous, albeit against obviously a very strong Italian defence. Clark, people were saying because it was his own goal, it's his fault that Ireland only drew or whatever, but he was quite good in general play throughout that game. And I think, Lukaku didn't look especially good against Italy. Origi, when he had two pretty good chances during the second half of that game and didn't look especially good. So I think defensively, Ireland should be okay. From an Irish point of view, I think the bigger fear is someone to score a goal.
Right. Who would that be?
Shane Long has been in terrific form towards the end of the season with Southampton, but I don't think the system that was used in last Monday's game particularly suits him. He's a better player when he has somebody working off of him.
Right.
In terms of options, Walters would have been the most obvious player. He won't be there tomorrow. Who do they play instead? Do they move Hoolahan in a more advanced role? Again, isn't going to necessarily suit Long's style of play. Daryl Murphy is an option from the bench, but has played 21 games for it and still hasn't scored a single goal. And then you have Robbie Keane, who isn't fit to play 90 minutes.
What about Jeff Hendrick?
He was superb on Monday, but I think along with the majority of the team faded quite a bit towards the latter stages. A lot of people said suggesting that it was a case of naivety and a lack of big tournament experience from certain players that they were willing, that they were so willing to drop back once they took the lead. But I think in some cases, a lot of them were just exhausted from the efforts of the first hour or so of the game. Even Houlihan, again, when he came off, was interviewed pitch side and said, yeah, when I came off, I had a problem with my calf and I was exhausted, whereas maybe he should have just said it was a tactical substitution rather than the fact that he physically wasn't capable of lasting 90 minutes. Hendrick, was very, very good. And people within the Ireland camp, even before the tournament, were saying that he has impressed them above everybody else in training. And hopefully, I mean, he's had an okay season at Derby, was in and out of the team quite a bit, had a couple of niggly injuries, but I think he's a player that is capable, certainly, of playing with a mid-table Premier League team.
All right. Second place in the group, very much up for grabs. Italy are through. Belgium are currently bottom, and Ireland and Sweden are on a point each. You know what? We should
potentially first place, Jimbo. If Ireland win, that means that Ireland-Italy could be a straight winning the group game.
That is true. But you know what? You mentioning Ibra there, Alan, that's how anonymous he was. I sailed through that entire chat about Italy's performance today without even discussing Ibra. I mean, the one massive chance which he turned out to be offside for, but he didn't know at the moment that he completely messed it up. Why was it? Was it him who was anonymous, or was he just policed out of the game by Italy?
I think that there was a lack of invention from Sweden in the final third. I think Sweden actually in the first half in particular were really bossing possession. They had a lot of the ball. They were winning the battles, I thought, down the flanks because they had the extra man. And they just didn't seem to know exactly what to do with it. I mean, I was really looking forward to that battle between Ibrahimovic and Chiellini because they have a quite a bitter history going back to him leaving Juventus. And they're friends now, but they were. And they both talked about each other as players who are, you know, the hardest to play against. And there was a point early in the first half where there was a corner, I think it was, and Ibrahimovic sort of threw Chiellini to the ground with his forearm, and before that he had his elbow on the back of his head. So it looked like it was going to bubble up into something, and it just never really happened. And I think that's more to do with Sweden's lack of support for him than it is from Ibra himself.
Right, okay. A lot of talk about there being ructions within the Belgian camp. No doubt that would be Team Kevin De Bruyne and Team Hazard going at it, and a team will not member.
Well, that was quite interesting in that the rumour was that Courtois and Wilmots had squared up to each other after the Italy game. But today they both came out and did the pre-match press conference together and said, look, Courtois essentially said, I was frustrated after the game, which is only natural after our performance, disappointed, whatever, but there wasn't a fight.
Right.
But there was this talk that to me is extraordinary that the players have been... Wilmot's been saying, all right, then let's hear your tactical ideas. And the players have been telling him how to do tactics, which is not probably the ideal position to be in one game into a European championship.
I found it absolutely sensational that Wilmot, after the Italy game, he was asked something about the Italian defence and said, oh, it's purely because it's Juventus players who play the club football together. He has Vertonghen and Alderweireld, who he has, up until now, refused to play as a centre-half partnership.
Well, we'll see if his fortunes improve then on Saturday against Ireland. Also on Saturday, Portugal, Austria and Iceland, Hungary. Let's begin with Portugal, Austria, which is two teams trying to bounce back. Portugal from their draw with Iceland, and Austria, of course, from a very, very surprising 2-0 defeat to Hungary. Live now from the heart of Austria, Vienna, DJ Christian Cummings is going to tell us about the mood back home. Christian!
Hello to you. How are you?
I'm very well. How is Austria? How is the nation?
Yeah, a little bit nervous. There were great hopes. I wouldn't say euphoria. I heard euphoria being spoken about. There was a quiet confidence that Austria could show a wide audience just how much they've improved, that they're a real football force. They were so good in qualifying. And then there was a bit of stage fright, wasn't there? Everything seemed to go wrong. The game was a bit hectic, and everything that could go wrong went wrong. So I think the feeling is now we've got a chance to at least show that we can play a lot better than that.
All right. Of course, you're going to be taking on, you mentioned Portugal trying to bounce back themselves. Cristiano Ronaldo, who had an off day and then went and put his foot in his mouth after the match, and he'll be under pressure to perform. And you're going to be without your best defender, Alexander Dragovic, who's suspended. And oh my word, it does rather sound as though not necessarily time to panic, but at least have a heightened awareness due to the extremely adverse conditions that you're facing.
Yeah, it looks like Sebastian Prudl will come in the central defence, and he's a good, solid player. But it's a bit like when England played Wales, and you knew that if Bale had the ball, anything could happen. Any defence that isn't world-class is going to be worried when they see someone like Ronaldo running towards them, particularly when he must feel he has a point to prove. So, yeah, I mean, the sense of nervousness is there. Austrians are very like the English when they approach watching sport, that there's a sense of dread. So I heard people talking about euphoria, but all my football fan friends were, oh, I hope, you know, we don't do too badly, basically. Although the proof is that they could play, that there's always a kind of sense of impending dread among my friends watching Austria play football. So, yeah, everyone is, of course, worried that Ronaldo might find the form we see him playing week for week for Real Madrid and do it against Austria. And can the back four for Austria withhold that sort of pressure? They faced Sweden, were a good team. Russia, well, you know, they qualified above Russia. Russia aren't a fantastic team. So they have tested against top teams, but not really world-class strikers like Ronaldo if he's on top form.
Mm. Christian, also, the qualifying was good, but the Hungary match wasn't exactly a one-off in that the previous four matches, Austria lost three of them. The only one that they won was against Malta. So this is actually quite a rough run of form that you're on.
Yeah, it's as if they peaked too early, wasn't it? It was at September with that 4-1 victory away to Sweden. Mm. And that's, I guess, when everyone's saying, look what we can do. And as I mentioned earlier, it wasn't just that they won. Austria's often battled through in the past, but they were winning by playing well. And there's certainly been a lot of setbacks in 2016. They haven't managed to recreate that momentum when they won, I think, four or five games in a row in qualifying and in friendlies. And yeah, they're searching for form. And of course, when there's so much expectations riding on it, and you know you've messed up the first game, you haven't played as well as you can, then there's even more pressure. So if you felt nervous in the first match, I don't imagine that nerves are going to be soothed by facing a Portugal that's hungry for its first victory at Euro 2016 in the next game. Mm. They only need that form and they need it quickly.
Well, best of luck, Christian. Let's hope you don't celebrate too much if it does go your way, you know.
Well, yeah, we don't want any small nation mentality. Austria's got 9 million people. Surely that's medium nation mentality, which is kind of like, yeah, that's all right.
Yeah,
it's Portugal.
Yeah, play it cool. That would be all right.
Yeah,
all right.
We'll try. We'll try.
Fingers crossed, then, Christian. And if you're in Vienna and have a radio, where can people listen to you, Christian?
Oh, they can listen to me on FM Fear, the Austrian national radio's best channel with, you know, critical thinking and great music. And they can also watch the football in our special fan base in this cool sort of old factory called the Vuk, where we met you, actually.
Yeah, I've been there. It was very cool. Nice one, Christian. Okay. Thank you very much indeed.
Nice.
Speak to you soon.
Nice to hear from you. I love your pod. I shall keep listening.
Yeah, that's Christian Cummings out of FM Fear, which is where my radio is tuned whenever I'm in Vienna. I'm quite excited by Portugal, much so I'd like Christian and Austria to do well, but I'm quite excited by this Portugal side and the suggestions that Fernando Santos could go with Nani and Quaresma and Cristiano Ronaldo in one glorious talent package.
It'd be fun. I'd be interested to see how he would do it. Obviously, there's one logical way of doing it, which would involve moving Ronaldo out to the wing, but I don't know that he'd be too thrilled about that, so I don't know exactly how I'll make it all work, but it definitely...
Can't he be in the middle with Nani and Quaresma out wide?
He could be, but Nani actually played pretty well through the middle of that last game. He was arguably much more threatening looking than Ronaldo was. But yes, I mean, I think it's more likely that Ronaldo winds up through the middle, whatever the shape is. I do think the way Quaresma's played this season at Besiktas, it will be exciting if they can make that happen. Mm. And definitely they need to change something because it was a pretty flat performance in the first game.
Certainly was.
I do remember against Iceland, Nani had a chance during the first half, which was a header. And I just screamed if that was Ronaldo, it was a goal.
Yeah. I think he screamed as well. Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, I'm looking forward to that game. Portugal-Austria, the other match from that group, sees Iceland, fresh from that mighty point against the Portuguese, take on Hungary, the team that only went and kind of outdid them in the upset stakes with that 2-0 win. I'm not sure where this came from at all. And whether Iceland will be able to weather the Magyar storm is a big question, one which we now put to Stefan Sneer Augustsson. Stefan, hello. Happy Icelandic Independence Day.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for remembering.
No. I always do. The card's in the post, as usual. But you have so many things to celebrate right now, Stefan. How exciting was the draw the other night for a start?
It was amazing. I think everyone was a bit surprised, even though we always thought we had a chance. We know that Portugal usually starts these tournaments a little slow, so playing them in the first game was always good luck in the draw.
Mm.
So we played a very defensive game, we were able to grab a point.
Right. 27.8 possession, which is pretty impressive stuff in the game against Portugal. Of course, against Hungary, you might be expected to take the game to them a little bit more. Is that an adjustment that this team can easily make?
Yeah, I think so. I think against Portugal, we were obviously underdogs, so we had a different game plan. Very defensive, as you say. But against Hungary, it'll be different. I think it's a little risky because against these smaller nations, Iceland sometimes tends to not raise their game enough. It's easy against the big boys like Holland and Portugal, where everyone's watching. But in a game where we're maybe expected to do better, it might be hard to motivate the players.
Right.
Also, I think these are two kind of similar teams in a lot of ways, kind of underdog teams both. So it's going to be a very, very hard-fought game.
Yeah, I can't imagine there's going to be any problem motivating Iceland's players for this match. Hafþór Björnsson had a magnificent video where he offered to, was it pop Cristiano Ronaldo's head in case of an adverse result?
Yeah, exactly. I think that might have had some effect on him because he was a little rusty. And I think after the game, he said some comments about how Iceland won't go anywhere in the tournament, which, you know, how the football karma gods work. So that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. What was the reaction to that back in Iceland?
I mean, obviously, elation. A lot of people are trying to get tickets out to France now because they see that we might be able to come through the group. And no, there was also a lot of talk about Ronaldo and his comments and how he kind of sulked and whined as he is wont to do.
Mm. People in England very familiar with Siggy Superstar, if you like, and I think Thor how do I say this? Haldorsson, with his amazing performance in goal the other night, caught everyone's eye. Who's your favourite player out of the team?
I mean, obviously you like Ylva and you like Adam Johnson, who is a legend at the moment, and I'd probably choose Alfred Simpson, who is a striker for Augsburg, is in very good form in the German Bundesliga. He grew up in my town and played for the same club and youth academy that I did, and I remember seeing him play when he was younger, and he's gone very far with lots of determination. He was never the most talented. He was always in the lower teams, the B team and stuff, but he had the determination required and now he's doing great things.
All right, then Hungary, who've beaten you on their last five meetings with Iceland.
Yeah, I mean, you can say that about most teams, really. I think the Iceland team now is something we've never seen before, really. So most teams have beaten us many times before.
All right, well, listen, best of luck on Saturday in Marseille. I hope you have an absolutely terrific time there. And with luck, we'll be catching up with you again soon, Stefan.
All right, sounds good. Speak to you later.
Well, that was Stefan. Paolo?
Yeah, I've got a very compelling piece of information for tomorrow's game.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out somebody has, I'm not sure exactly who, but I have it written down in front of me, has put together the full list of the length of the different national anthems.
Ooh.
And I can tell you that Iceland tomorrow, you will definitely get to hear the longest national anthem of the Euros at 108 seconds.
Really?
But Hungary is one of the shortest ones at 55 seconds, so probably the largest disparity in length between two anthems that we'll see at this tournament as well.
Okay, so Hungary is the shortest?
No, the shortest is actually England and Northern Ireland and Poland, all of them 38 seconds.
This is interesting, because that's not all the English national anthem.
No, but I guess it's the version that gets played.
Right, so that's down to what, you know, that's basically UEFA favouritism, which nations they'll allow to, you know, go on to their third verse. You know, that key change in the Italian one where... You think, oh, that was nice, and then it roams off into, you know, hope you like our new direction.
Italy comes in at number two, and I think that's because a lot of people I know who aren't even Italian still quite enjoy the national anthem.
It's one of those ones people get behind.
There are also another two verses to the Irish national anthem, but I don't think many people know the words.
All right, okay then. It's funny because a lot of it, whenever Italy play now, a big talking point is seeing Gigi Buffon belting out the anthem, and indeed all the players. When I was in Italy, the biggest talking point, bar none, about the Azzurri was the fact that none of them sang the anthem. None of them did. They all looked like kind of, well, I don't know, year nine at the school concert or something, just standing there looking awkward. And there used to be questions in Parliament and all this kind of thing, and it was a big subject of public debate. How can we get our players to care enough to sing the anthem? I'm not sure what changed it. It might well have been Gigi arriving in the national side. Anyway, that's all unimportant. What's going to happen when Iceland take on Hungary, Alan?
I think Hungary were quite good against Austria. A lot of people seem to think that Austria had fallen flat, but Hungary deserved quite a bit of credit as well. The striker is Adam
Nagy.
Szalai.
Is that
it? I don't know if I'm saying it right, but it's Szalai. Yeah,
hadn't scored for Hungary in, I think, more than 2 years before that goal, but looked very, very impressive.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Zoltán Gera in the sort of deep holding role as well. It had echoes for me of a particular young memory of going to watch Woking play in the 96-97 FA Cup, and Clive Walker was playing for them, and he was just this player who clearly was already in his late 30s, but was just clearly of a higher quality than most of the players on his team. He was late in his career, didn't have the legs that he used to, and I think that's exactly where Zoltán Gera is now. He's just a really classy player when you watch him, but he's no longer at 37 quite as mobile as he maybe was when we remember seeing him over here in England.
Right.
I also think this game tomorrow could be the biggest V sign we've seen so far towards those who are complaining about the tournament being expanded.
Right.
I mean, two teams who, you know, if it was a 16-team tournament, wouldn't be there. But now, I mean, if Hungary win, that guarantees their place. If Iceland win tomorrow, they're pretty much true to the last 16 as well.
Crazy times that we live in, Alan. Crazy times. Well, we'll be back in 24 hours to see how much of that actually came to pass. Some exciting games on Saturday. Of course, we'll be looking forward to Sunday's action. Not quite sure what that involves. But games, you know. So do join us for that. Paolo, thanks ever so much for being with us today.
Cheers, James.
It was worth the price of entry, wasn't it? Because you were a bit concerned. Because we're in a nightclub, dear. It was worth the admission, eh?
Yeah, it's amazing how we've managed to get them to turn the sound down for us to do this.
Well, you know. And Alan, thanks so much for being with us. Yes. Are you popping by another time?
I'm not sure.
Okay, we'll see. If you're in the area,
invite me back, I think.
Why not swing by? All right. And producer Ben. But you know, you can put it back up now. We'll be back at the end of tomorrow. So we'll see you then, listener. Bye.